Okay, so I'm going to present a work I've been doing for the last 3 months since I arrived at UCSB as part of the SLAX project, which is the measurement of the weak lensing signals around the SLAX strong lenses. The other part of my talk, if I have time, would be about the detection of dark matter caustics with weak lensing. So we want to measure as well as possible the density profile of galaxies, and particularly red hot galaxies, and to link the evolution with the hierarchical CDM paradigm. And we want to address the issue of the mass distribution and particularly the relative contribution of dark matter and stars within the systems. So to do so, we have three ways to address these issues, which is the strong lensing, which can probe the density profile below a few kiloparsecs, which is about the effective radius of the lens galaxy. We also have the stellar kinematics, which probe almost the same scale. And beyond that, we can use weak lensing to constrain the density profile down to 300 kiloparsecs with the ICS data we have. The SLAX strong lensing, the strong lensing features of this SLAX lensing is mainly the ancient rings we observed in the very center can be modeled very successfully with a single isothermal ellipsoid. And if we model the extended Einstein rings, we can get tight constraints on the orientation and ellipticity of the dark matter of the total density profile, which is very close to the lens we see. And but essentially, the strong lensing only gives you the mass within the Einstein radius, and it doesn't tell very much about the slope and or the density profile within this radius. So,
so do you model the back profiles just using quadrupoles coming from the ellipsoid? Do you also include some sort of tidal shear generally, or?
I think the it's modeled with an isothermal ellipsoid in which the ellipticity and orientation are left free. So.
Don't include external shear on the models?
Aren't they degenerated?
None of people require any.
Okay,
no. Yeah. And the orientation are pretty much of the shear, of the potential and the orientation of the light are pretty much the same. Okay. So with this very well constrained mass within a given aperture, we can already compare it with the light we have in the same radius, and we see in this plot, which is the mass light ratio of the radius, that most of them have large mass light ratio, which means that we need dark matter even below the effective radius.
Can you go back? So what's the typical, what's the MLL, what's the standard MLL you compare?
Well, this is the total MLL in the V-band, and of course the lower limit is the mass light ratio of stars themselves. And there is a trend for the most massive systems to have larger mass light ratio. sure.
Do you know for the put what the one would be with respect to Metan for the 7-hour threshold?
About this for
okay, also. That's the one, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you said you need something that I was in the third regard to think that more higher mass light ratio, that is still within effective radius, is effective radius.
I don't know, this is what we seem to observe. and I think from theory, some people expect a higher mass light ratio or more massive system. So.
Not within the
effect. Okay.
Which band? Why are you
seeing
luminosity in which band?
V-band.
Well, that could be, column.
So, I mean, from color kinematics, the typical fraction within an RE of dark matter is only 30%. But I see that both looks like much more than that. So, what's causing?
Well, the fraction of dark matter spread between 10% and 60%. Do you agree? Mm-hmm.
Four times
2
is 8, and then...
Yes. Okay. So, combining strong lensing and the stellar kinematics, as illustrated in this plot, we can say about the... a bit more about the slope of the density profile, and it turns out that the slope is very close to isothermal. That's in here. But, so, yes, what happens beyond the Q parsecs? For these systems, for DSS spectroscopy, it's about 10 kilometers per second.
Is it the DSS spectra or do we have a lot?
So the red comments is Sloan, the blue comment is like EXA, and we're getting Kempin BLT for a lot on this last night. So this analysis was just Sloan.
Okay, so as I said, weak lensing can probe the density profile beyond the effective radius, but we need to do this statistically because the signal to noise for the weak lensing signal to noise for a single lens is much too small. So a brief. A brief introduction to weak lensing. So, given the diffraction angle for a single lens plane, which is related to the gravitational potential projected into this plane. Okay. So, if we have this lens equation relating the point in the source plane to a point in the image plane. Beta equals theta minus alpha theta, and if we locally, if you take the Jacobian of this relation, we get the. Can you see? Oh, no. Okay, well, know that. So
use the black one.
I skip. Yeah. Okay, so. The magnification tensor contains two eigenvalues, one minus kappa plus minus gamma, and the circular source will appear stretched in a given direction due to the shear gamma and So the axis ratio is directly related to the shear. The axis ratio of the observed image is directly related to the shear gamma. indeed it is related to the radius shear, which is gamma over 1 minus kappa. So by measuring the shape of background galaxies, we get the axis ratio, and we confine the shear gamma. And as you can see on this figure, when we go further out from the lens center, the strength of the shear signal decreases quickly, and when we are far from the center, we need to do it statistically for the signal to show up, because on the single source the signal is the shape of the given source is dominated by the intrinsic shape of the source itself. So far we have 18 lenses observed in this redshift range with a velocity dispersion between 200 and 300 kilometers per second, and they have been observed with the ACS in the F814 band. There are deep exposures, 2,000 seconds, and thanks to this depth, we can achieve a very large number density of background sources, about 80 per square minute. So, as you can see on this plot, the SCS field is centered here on the, it's not exactly centered on the lens, but the game is just to measure the shear, these apertures around each lens. Before obtaining the astrophysical signal, we need to correct for several systematic effects, especially the point spread function of the ACS. Because the galaxies are convolved by the PSF of the instrument, their shapes are modified, and so we need to correct for this effect. But this is a difficult exercise, because the ACS PSF varies with time because of the brazing of this telescope, and the focal plane moves with time. And initially we have too few stars per ACS field to infer directly from the observations what the PSF is. So we need to build a mock PSF fields using a tiny team, and get the, I won't go into detail, but with the very few stars we have in the field, we can get the best piece, the best template PSF, and we use this mock PSF to correct the observed stars and galaxies. But in addition to the, you see in this figure that the ellipticity of stars is not constant over the field, and so it can imprint a systematic polarization on distant galaxies, and we have to correct. So for instance, here we see in this figure the ellipticity of observed stars for the this is the coedition of the 18 fields. And you see, this is why you see a lot of stars. And before correction and after applying these corrections, and as it should be, the patterns have disappeared, and the mean ellipticity over the field is pretty much consistent with zero. But in addition to the PSF, we have to correct for another kind of systematic, which is the charge, the transfer efficiency. So during the readout of the CCD, some electrons are delayed because the CCD is getting older and some defects can retain electrons. So it produces a tail over the fields in the y direction, which is the readout, the direction of readout, and so the shape of sources is a stretch in the y direction, so it produces a negative E1 shear. And this effect is more pronounced close to the gap between the CCDs because the readout is done at y equals 0 and y equals the edge of the CCD of the field. And this effect is really non-linear because it is more severe for faint objects. This is why we can't use stars to infer the correction which should apply to galaxies, because galaxies are usually much fainter than stars. But we use the work of Jason Ross, was calibrated these effects in a Cosmos field of view. And as you can see in this plot, this is the measure E1 electricity as a function of y-axis over the CCD, over the field of view, before CCD correction. You see a huge and highly significant signal of about 4% at the center of the field of view. And the signal decreases for brighter galaxies. And after correction, everything is consistent with zero. So after these several corrections, we can check if there are still some residuals in the electricity profile around the construct around the lenses. And we can split the shear signal into tangential and rotational components. And for a circular lens, a gravity should produce only tangential modes, plus signs. And this is what is shown here. As a function of radius, the tangential shear signal measured on galaxies is that one. And the rotational component is the blue one, and is statistically consistent with zero. And we can measure the same signal onto corrected stars, and as you can see, they are well consistent with zero electricity. So we are confident that the amplitude of systematics is below 0.2% shear. So this is the Knox scale now, the shear profile we measure for the 18 lenses, split into 7 beams. And rescale, and before stacking the signal, we scale the angular scales into the effective radius of each lens. So you see that the profile is not consistent with the constant mass to light ratio, whereas an external sphere profile fits much better the observed data. And actually, this is not a fit. This is just the extrapolation of the strong lensing, the HTML sphere model used to fit strong lensing, and once projected into the its observations, we don't need any tuning of the parameters, and the fit is very, very nice.
Have you tried this on fields without massive ellipticals in the middle to see if blank fields give you no signal?
We don't have such fields.
The archive is full.
Yeah.
Just to suggest if it's not some subtle residual of your PSF correction.
Yes, this is a way to test.
I mean, obviously the signal in the middle will be real, but whether you could constrain whether you get the tail slope right.
This one? This is the shear goes out like out at minus one. Yes, it's a bit shallower, yeah.
So what slope
did you require in the mass? No, let me show you. Okay, so the IHTML sphere is highly over-constrained by the strong lensing model, so we need some freedom to fit the weak lensing. And for instance, we can assume the single power law for dark matter, and of course we should add the stellar component because we see it. And we can leave the stellar mass to light ratio as a free parameter. And if we do so, we see that the constraints we get for the slope of the dark matter component and the stellar mass to light ratio, the best fit is here at about 1.6. But the profile seems to be a bit shallower than isothermal. Also, the isothermal sphere is still consistent with the data. Yes, if you assume for the stellar mass light ratio, yes, you get something very close to isothermal. And well, this large scale behavior is also measured, I think, by Sheldon et al. With galaxy lensing in much larger scales, and they get this slope. So this should not be seen as a lensing profile, but as the contribution of large-scale structure to the galaxy mass cross correlation.
Well,
this is a few. This is about 300 kiloparsecs.
So the two-handler term normally becomes important around like a megaparsec or so, or even more, right? So
yeah, well, I can show you. But I have compared these results with how
something wrong with this plot on the left. Why? I mean, am I right in saying that this means that you have an upper constraint? I mean, basically the mass to light ratio can't be higher than 6?
Yeah.
But I thought that you had on your previous talk this means this is the
stellar mass to light ratio. And of course it can be larger than the total mass to light. This is why
we have this stronger
limit. Okay, so we can also try to fit an FW. But we need to assume some kind of scaling between the scale radius of the FW profile and the effective radius. And in this case, we assume just a constant scaling between these parameters. And as before, the stellar mass light ratio is left a free parameter. And again, we have this kind of constraints and find about the scale radius it is about 5 times the effective radius, and the stellar mass ratio is about 5. But you see that the large scale, at large scale, the fit is not very good, and we lack mass or shear at a few tenths of effective radius.
So if these galaxies, if there were satellites living in bigger groups,
Well, and even if they are central galaxies or bigger groups, this would be true.
Yeah,
if they are satellites,
Well, right, I mean, rare to have galaxies of this luminosity, central galaxy for a massive group like that.
They would all be massive groups if those were the central galaxy.
I guess I'm just wondering, if you can reconcile, your observed galaxy mass correlation function with what you'd expect, by placing these galaxies into bigger groups than you and I would expect.
Okay, and if we compare our measurement with the Sheldon et al. 2004 result, which are based on the same SDSS lenses, we see a pretty the range we have, which is between 30 kiloparsecs and 300 kiloparsecs. And as you can see, even for this data, the anisotropic sphere is still quite a good fit.
What do you mean due to testing?
Particular
electrons.
Oh, okay. That's
all we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have to give minus one.
Okay, so beyond the radial shape profile, we can also make 2D convergence fields by measuring the shear field. We can invert non-parametrically the signal and get the projected density field and try to see if there are evidences for ellipticity of the dark matter component. But this is to do. Okay, so I think that the preliminary results we got are promising because when I started this analysis, I didn't expect that with 20 lenses we would get such good signal to noise. But we still have to work on the control of systematics and maybe at this issue what is the effect of the surface brightness profile of the lens itself on the shape measurement of the source when they are close to the center, and maybe the effect of dilution by satellites, which are not lensed, but they should lower the shear signal at small scales. Okay, and from the modeling side also, we could improve the modeling by combining properly into big I square, the strong lensing, weak lensing, and kinematic. But so far, we found that the cell density profile is still close to isothermal. And this kind of analysis, we see that the dark matter begins very close to the center of the lens, the effective radius also. And maybe we will see at the end, when with the full sample, we will see where it ends. unless the large scale structures start to dominate, and we won't see the density profile of the Sagan lens, but instead the galaxy mass correlation function. Okay, and with the full sample, of course, we can split the it into low Z, high Z, then C for evolutionary trends, or low and high mass. And I think we could address the issue of the halo electricity itself. Okay, I think we can have a break now. No, you don't want to ask questions?
The only thing is that I was wondering, and do you know, I mean, people have been working on this two halo time for this thing. Do you know if that's, if the H's are kind of consistent with what you find? Or, I mean, that shouldn't be so difficult to check, right?
Yes, we have to check. We have to check that. But I really think that the two halo term can start to be important. Well, 1 megaparsec, or maybe a bit below that, so it makes sense to. Well, this is the blue points are SDSS measurements, at least those of Sheldon et al. Or almost.
That's well beyond the algebraic radius according to the best fits. So shouldn't one find three, four, or six or something?
Yes. I agree.
So 1.6 is average over the entire range.
So I was asking if you do it between, let's say, 5, 10, and 100, you may fit there just on those points.
Yes, you mean in this range? Well, the slope is close to.
The break radius is only like, you know, is around 20 parsecs, right?
Yes. It's about 5 effective radius. Yeah.
Much shallow than what you expect.
The particle difference, I think, you know, between SIS and NFW all on those scales.
No, but the NFW would predict the slope of 3 there.
Yeah, asymptotically, right? I mean, like, you know, but around RS, it seems like it's, you know,
No, that's why I'm asking if you do a fit between 10 and 100, you should be very, I mean, according to that left plot, you're well beyond the rate range, so you can find three. You can find something that's probably more than two.
So this seems to be a first look to have a
thing. No, that's what I mean, that's 1 minute passing.
Yeah, we have 3 points in mind.
Yeah, but
when you look at your
ratio
images, can you see
the
other galaxies that
you're
rolling?
Yeah.
For some of them,
they are.
Separation of LRD. So you could pick out things.
Okay, so now I switch to a different topic, which is the idea to use gravitational lensing to detect and to probe the existence of dark matter characteristics. So this is the work I've been doing in collaboration with Paris and Kansas University. So the collisionless nature of dark matter implies that the phase space, the distribution of dark matter particles obeys the system of Vlasov Poisson equations, which are there, and when the structures grow and get nonlinear, we have a very strange effect in the that can occur in the build-up of the of the halo, dark matter halo, and you can call them caustics. So the caustics are nothing but sharp density pikes in the distribution of dark matter, and of course they are completely due to the collisionless and colonized nature of dark matter. So if there are such density pikes, they should be completely dark because gas should not be reside in such caustics. So this is why lensing may be one of the most promising ways to detect them. And like lensing, it's a nice example of the of what we call catastrophes. Okay, so to see the analogy, the dynamics of collisionless fields are, if we express them in the Lagrangian representation, we can express the displaced fluid element as a by this relation. So the curve here is the undisplaced field, and we see that the displaced field is just the Q plus the gradient of some potential times a small time step. And yeah, the Lenz equation, you know it very well, it's pretty similar to it. And the magnification and the Jacobian of this relation gives you the magnification, and as well here in the Zaldovich approximation after a small displacement, the evolved density field is related to the original density field by this Jacobian. And as for Lensing, these equations gives rise to caustics and critical caustic manifolds and critical manifolds in close analogy with the existence of critical lines and caustics lines for Lensing. The only difference is that for Lensing we see the right hand side of this equation, whereas for in this case we see of course the displaced the field. So we see caustics and we don't see the critical manifolds. And to the low end, so the fields can produce are those for which the one of the eigenvalues of the Jacobian vanishes, and in this case we have the density is critical with this kind of singularity, so it's a very low singularity. And likewise for gravitational lensing, the when you go close to full caustic, the magnification goes like Vita to the minus one up. So if we now consider the spherical collapse model, in which an overdense region collapses by its own gravity, and here I plot the radius of a given shell as a function of time, and after, well, below, before this t equals zero time, we have an expansion, and then the shell reaches its turnaround radius, and then starts to collapse. And if the orbits are perfectly radial, it rebounds and rebounds and so on. And the first rebound is called the first caustic, and this is more clearly seen in the phase space diagram. And also this and lambda is the radius, and here it's the radial velocity. And you see that dark matter first in fall and then rebound, reaches the first plastic and so on. And okay, and the thickness of the of this ribbon is nothing but the temperature of the dark matter itself. So it decreases with time, with cosmic time. And for most of the dark matter candidates, we know the best dark matter candidates we have so far. The medium is very very cold, and the typical size of this. So this ribbon is a few centimeters per second. So in n-body simulations, we, of course, the spherical model is a bit simplistic, but in n-body simulations, if we build this kind of diagram, we can see them. The simulation has been a bit tuned to force the structure to collapse at the center of the simulation box, but these are really are completely realistic halos picked up from normal simulations. So we see the innermost, the outermost caustics, the 1, 2 or the 3 outermost ones. Oh, this one, yes, it has been a bit tuned to, I think, the.
But they've been trained simulations.
Yes, this one, yes, but that one, no, it's completely. These are realistic halos. Sorry.
The power spectrum, like for this Fox or solar model, see the power spectrum.
Yes. For this one, yes, and that one, no, because it has been a bit tuned to force the structure to collapse in the middle of your simulation, and I think that but the small scale power is realistic for a CDM power spectrum.
So the visual radius
Yes, the visual radius is about 800 kilometers per second in this case. So usually the virial radius and the first caustic are almost at the same position, more or less. It depends on cosmology. Okay, so let me show you a few movies. So this is not a realistic CDM simulation, because in this case the small scale power has been completely suppressed. And this is why you see the input grid of your particles. But you see this is just to illustrate the presence of what caustics are. Okay, they are sharp. Shells surrounding the collapsing structure, and if we look at it in the
one kind of synergy is that you have introduced a color with a power spectrum. So
sorry,
when you say the simulation there is not a CDM simulation.
No, because the
you have a template in your power spectrum.
Yes,
and basically it's a caustic. You see, it's on a scale of the
Cartesian
scale. Is that correct?
I don't know. I could not confirm. But yes, you need to suppress the very very small scale, typically the scale of your caustic, to see them properly. And this is the same simulations, but now seen in the phase space. and well, now yes, you can see that the caustics are present, and the nice properties of this pattern is that they are very very stable for this kind of simplified collapse, and the state is much steadier than the inner parts in this. Okay. Yes, yes, I think. Okay. And now the density profile we are more interested in. This is the projection of the free space along the radial axis. Okay. And as I said, you see that here is the caustics. And as I said, they behave much gently than the inner part. So I think that in the outer part there is room for.
What is going on in the inner part? The inner part basically you mentioned stabilized, and the outside you have material going in. The inside, why the change is constant?
Well, because there is always in falling.
But as time goes on, you have less material going in. But then the inner part should be more or less in a steady kind of
situation, but then it's not that level.
It's hard to mind. And then it's a bit in the inner part. Well, the secondary infall model predicts a steeper slope, but the simulation does not have this behavior. Okay. If we go back to the analytical simplified model, we see again the sharp features, okay. And if the temperature of dark matter is not zero, this pattern are softened by the non-zero velocity dispersion of dark matter, but they are still there, and you need very hot dark matter to completely suppress them.
Substructures?
No. Well, of course, substructures will make them more complex, more with a shape. But if dark matter is cold and collisionless, you have this kind of caustics. Mm-hmm. Okay, so to observe them with lensing, we need to project them. Okay, so this is the surface mass density, and in this case, you already see that the contrast is much less steep than for the 3D density profile. So you don't expect a very strong signal for the structures. And this is due to the small singularity. R to 1 over square root of R is not very sharp. So once projected, the surface mass density is not singular at all. But you still have some features on the shear profile. You see these sawtooth patterns maybe observed with weak lensing, but you need to.
This is again the simplified simulation you were talking about.
Yeah.
So exactly what is going on? I mean, if let's say if you, well, first thing you can do is to cut off the password, so then you don't have a small scale structure. But even that, I cannot imagine why you still have to be a regular structure there, because if you have a random phase, then everything will be just washed out, I guess. And then you are still doing more or less spherical collapse, or?
Yeah, well, this is the. Yes.
Just
this is still spherical collapse because we are working on simulations to see how these fixtures can be smoothed down with a realistic power spectrum and so on. Okay, but with this idealized situation, we need about 200 cluster size halos to be observed from the ground, or as few as 60 clusters observed from space for the intrinsic ellipticity of sources to be beaten and the signal to show up. And so with 60 systems observed from space, we could actually probe the existence of. But the more difficult observational aspect is indeed actually to stack them properly. So we need to know what is the turnaround radius or the virial radius of for each system with a few percent accuracy. But it seems to be possible by combining weak sensing and X-ray data.
So are you saying the shells are always at the same radius for the
function of the variable? Yeah. If you rescale properly by the radius, turnaround radius, they are always.
The halos are not spherical, they have a range of shapes?
Yes, if they are elliptical, they will be. This pattern will be a bit smoothed out, but. They are still there, and you can stack them, stack your systems accordingly, and by matching the orientation. Okay, so in conclusion, say that the existence of dark matter caustics is a strong prediction for any causally lesionless. And called the dark matter system. And of course, the existence is a good test for the hypothesis of modifying gravity instead of adding collisionless dark particles. And in some systems, in real systems, we do see such. Features, for instance, in this shell galaxy, we see the caustics are interleaved because of the infall of the satellite.
This caustics are produced by
the stars. Why? Because if your satellite has a dark material. Yes, but so would the dark matter. Yes, I agree. But if your galaxy contains dark matter, the dark matter would be arranged in similar caustics. Don't you agree? Well, this is a caustic, this is a
phase wrapping that you project.
Yes, this is the apocenter of the circular orbit, so yeah, this is a caustic.
But this is not a spherical symmetric collapse, this is a.
Yeah, I agree. This is why they are not completely spherical.
Yeah, no, they alternate from side to side.
Yeah. And because the because of dynamical friction, that they are the maximum radius decreases. So. But yes, in addition to the lensing aspect, we are also looking at the gamma ray annihilation because the square density is very efficient in boosting the emissivity of caustics of the dark matter annihilation close to this kind of line of sight. Okay.
The surface density be, I mean, does the dark matter caustic become critical in its surface density in such a way that you can actually expect multiple imaging even very far out from the...
No, not from this kind of caustic.
It's a bit singular, right? I mean, it's some, on the caustic itself, the surface density is...
No, but if you consider the spherical, the collapse for a system with angular momentum, we can produce higher order caustics, which are more singular. Their shape is a bit more complex, but close to the center, you have much sharper caustics. Yeah. But those caustics would not produce strong lensing.
So in the simulation, I mean, n-body simulation, well, if you have a CDM model and then you have perturbations on various scale, on small scale, so what really happens is that you never really find a very sharp caustic, right? And because, dark matter particles may already be in small halos, which have which all have finite velocity dispersion. So then you never really have a very thin caustic, and instead that's broadened by the velocity dispersion in halos.
Yeah, well, you still have this kind of...
I thought Lisa Keeley actually believed in this model, but he has some new followers there. The picture is just completely wrong, because we have a hierarchy of merging events. You do have caustics. Those caustics are phase-wrapped into first objects that collapse, and those first objects fall into second generation, they get wrapped inside.
Yeah.
Very tiny, wrapped, complicated things. You never see certain shells like that. You wouldn't expect it when they're hierarchical. You would expect caustics, and on a very narrow length, on a scale, like you say, meters or maybe parsecs. But they'll be phase-wrapped in very complicated ways, crisscross throughout the halo.
This is why we focus on cluster scale because the caustics would be so as perturbed by galaxy scale caustic. And I agree that they are more complex. And you see, for instance, this is a group of galaxies falling into the Mornado. And probably they are costly, but the scaling is not not good enough to see them. But at all scales, they are.
But if you take an n-body simulation and you unsharp mask it, you just make a picture of it. Forget the velocities. You just make a picture of it in projection. Do you get sharp features like this?
No, in 3D you need, about 10 to 12 particles to start resolving the
mess. Which is a little bit below the scale that you can get with the gun.
So I think, I thought these are two-dimensional idealized simulations, but I can't remember these.
No, because, yes, they've been working on two different things. Yes, work on the method to solve the last of equations with a continuous method. And this, in this case, you really see the nice caustics. But of course, this is idealized. The simulations for the moment are just 1D or 2D. But this is no, this is a NVOD simulation with maybe the initial condition have been a bit tuned to just for the system to collapse at the center of your box. And in this case, I think that I should ask him, but I think the power has been suppressed at large scale, not at small scale, just to make sure that you will end up with the halo at the center of the simulation.
So, you have simulations you need to go to the people to the small scale.
Any more questions?